Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host and co-founder of Mighty Parenting, Sandy Fowler. And today we are actually talking about how to utilize resources to empower your teenager and college student. I know for me, this is one of those things that is often overlooked. I know I didn't think about empowering my kids to do and get their own resources. I mean, from the time they're babies, our job is about helping them learn and grow. And I often did so by encouraging them and helping them and fixing things for them and all of that. As they grow, the role that we play in their lives shifts. And it's really important that instead of doing for them or taking care of all those needs and fixing, to make that transition so that we can empower and teach them independence. And I think the best way we do that is by helping them gain access to information that is so much more than just a Google search, right,
Sandy? Yes, I know. It's, oh my gosh, and that's a big thing in our house. My husband had started that many, many years ago. No Google allowed when he would ask him about something. And this is actually a really timely topic for me because my older daughter is moving into that next phase of her life where she's getting ready to go out on her own. She's, you know, doing final interning and job hunting, as well as moving toward, you know, buying a car and getting an apartment and taking all those adulting steps. And you start to realize how much they still don't know. And while, yes, we are there for them, we want them to be independent, like you said, Judy. And so when Natalie and Allison proposed doing an interview and they had this topic of teaching our kids how to access all the resources around them, I was like, what a fabulous life skill. So I am glad that we're going to be tackling that today. And that we have our guests, Natalie Burrell and Allison Grant here helping us. They are from Life Success for Teens. Natalie founded it, and now she and a group of coaches equip young people with the life skills that they need to navigate high school and college and find success in the real world. And so Natalie and Allison are joining us today to share more about helping our kids learn how to access those resources around them. Thank you both so much for joining our Mighty Parenting family today.
Thank you for having us. We're so thrilled to talk to you today.
I'm going to jump right in here because you guys, we were able to chat just a little bit before the interview, and you talk about teens needing to learn how to access resources. Are kids not doing that? And if not, what problems is this creating?
That's a really good question. And, you know, I think the answer to that is some of our teens, yes, they are able to access resources. They have a knack for it. It comes very easy to them. They're able to have a conversation with an adult, no problem. However, many of our teenagers have a really hard time advocating for themselves or even knowing what it is that they need help with. And sometimes even when they know, you know, I need help with my math. Math is really, you know, difficult for me, for example. They have a hard time approaching somebody and seeking out help. So I think that is a really big piece of it is, you know, knowing what they need help with, but then also do they have the skills and the confidence and the tools to be able to figure out how do I get help with that? Who do I approach about it? How can I seek out a resource to help me or to make this an easier process for me?
Mm-hmm. If they're not doing that already, what are they doing? I mean, they're not able to make those connections with knowing what they need help with. That would impact their life, correct?
Yeah, I think a lot of times they're either shutting down or it's a very surface level search. So they do the first level search of, well, I went there once and it didn't work. So now what? what do I do? And that's where they get stuck, is they don't realize to pull back the layers and to go one step further and to find another person or look at it from a different aspect or a different direction. And so that's something that we really work on with our kiddos, is saying, hey, like, where, okay, step one didn't work. We still have 2, 3, 4, and 5 to try. Let's, you know, keep digging.
So when you say that to them, what types of reactions do you encounter? Like, do they just not realize that they need to do that? Or do they go, well, I don't know how to do that. I don't know where else to go beyond that first level.
I think a lot of times they're relieved. They're happy to know that somebody is there to facilitate that conversation and to walk them through it. I think, you know, it's all about scaffolding, like walking them through it once or twice and saying, don't stop, don't quit, keep looking if you didn't find it first. And that's a little bit of tenacity that I think you get as you become older, that you, if you didn't get what you wanted, you keep looking. But not all teenagers have that skill set yet. And I think sometimes we assume that they have it because they look like miniature adults and they talk and walk and act like adults. And a lot of them have a lot of adult qualities. But we also need to remember that this is their first time finding a resource. And that can be really challenging. I mean, if anybody's ever done anything with healthcare, you know you have to call 3 or 4 times before you get somewhere, right?
Yeah. And then it might take 4 hours.
Right. Well, I mean, that's so defeating. And so I think, you know, but the first time we all did it, we were like, but it should have worked. And it didn't. So now we know, okay, I better set 4 hours of my time up in the day and keep moving. And so we teach them how to do that. So I think that they feel relieved, and they also are, they're excited. Like, okay, this isn't the end. Like, we can keep going. We can keep doing this.
So they're finding out it's not a dead end. It's not a brick wall, that they can actually succeed. Do you find that the same process works for kids who have learning disabilities or ADHD or they're on the spectrum? Is that process still the same of how you teach them that skill?
Yeah, I do think it's the same, but it probably has a few more steps, a few more baby steps is probably the way that I should say it. So I'll give an example for you. I work with a student, we'll call her Maddie right now. She is a freshman in high school. She does have an IEP for learning disabilities, reading, writing, math, you name it. And she has a really hard time knowing what to do when she comes to an obstacle. So for example, I'm using this math example again. She will say, I don't know what the math homework is. And usually her typical response is to say, well, I can't do it. I don't know what the homework is. But if we really walk through, okay, where could we look to find out where your math homework is? She'll say, well, my teacher posts it online. Okay, let's look online and see if it's there. Or how about, do you have a friend who's in your class that we could text? You know, we're going through all of these different steps, but for her, because she's an IEP student and she learns just a little bit differently from some of our other students, we made a physical list of the different places that she could go to get her question answered, so that the next time this comes up, which it, you know, inevitably will, she already has that list made, and we can say, okay, Maddie, you don't know what the math homework is. Let's pull up our list of resources and places to turn to find out that answer. And just having something tangible and kind of a system or steps to follow is really helpful for her.
So you've actually helped her make the first resource, which is a list of resources.
Correct. We're big on lists of resources around here. Absolutely. And, you know, to be honest, our favorite thing to do is to make sure that our teenagers are equipped with the resources that they will need before there is an issue. And I'll give you another example. I have a college student that we are working with right now. She just transitioned to college, and I know that she is a student with special needs and she takes some medications, and she needed to be able to find a psychiatrist on campus. And we needed to do that before her prescriptions ran out. So the week that she moved into campus, we made a giant list of resources, including, you know, the clinic, including, you know, the mental health facility, the counseling services, so that she would have that at her disposal. I even, you know, had her do some homework of walking there physically so that she knew the path to get there before she ever had an issue. If she ever were to have a panic attack, or if her medication were to run out, she already knows where to turn so that in her moment of need, she is not panicking or freaking out about what to do next. We've already run through it. We've already done the fire drill for her.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that what you guys are saying is that all of our kids need to learn the skill of actually first getting in front of it and getting information and finding solutions before they even run into any obstacles, right?
Absolutely. I often refer to the first time that you're away from home in college and you get sick, and how you have to figure out where, if there's a doctor on campus, or where would you go to buy, you know, medicine, and that nobody wants to be looking those things up when you don't feel well, and that you want to have that information ready. And so it's being prepared, and that preparation can be so stress relieving when you know that you're ready to go for that situation to occur.
And we realize that we can't prep for every possible situation, you know, but the main ones, you know, the resources that we think our students are likely to need: academic support, maybe mental health support, maybe, you know, where the closest type of store is for them. Some of those main issues that are likely to come up, that's where we're trying to seek out some resources ahead of time.
So as a parent, I'm listening to you and going, okay, I need to help my child develop all of these lists and help them get ahead so that they're prepared for whatever comes up. How do I do that without sounding or acting like they aren't able to do it themselves?
Absolutely. I think it starts with a conversation of, where are you comfortable going? So how much support do you want? I can hand you these things, and you can do this all on your own, and I can check back with you at the end and give them an end date. Or we can say, you know what, why don't we set a couple of dates, and we can check in with one another and see how that progress is going, and then by the end have all of them. I think it's really important to meet your child wherever their skill set is, and if you know that they can handle it on their own, then you let them do it on their own and you handle them like a mature young person. But if you know that this is something that they are going to get overwhelmed with, then you do the first couple with them. There's nothing wrong with that. And then after you do it a couple times, you step back and you say, okay, the next one you're going to do partially by yourself. When you get their name and their phone number and their email address, come back and show me. All right, now that you have that, now I want you to go back and find this, you know, a couple more things off of the list. And eventually they build the confidence that they know how to do it on their own.
Do you find that they run into a big roadblock going, well, I Googled it and the answer didn't come up right away?
Typically not. Sometimes I would say that happens. Sometimes even when we're doing a list like this with a student, we run into a place where we can't find a direct answer, and then we just figure it out. You know, if we can't find where the medical center is on campus, for example, we're going to call the main number and we're going to ask until we get there. So we talk about that. You know, what comes up if there's a roadblock to us trying to, you know, find out a piece of information? How else can we go around that roadblock to find the answer?
I do think the benefit of doing the first couple with your student does help them see that you get stuck too, and that they're not alone, and that it's okay to get stuck, and it's okay to say, okay, now what? Where do we go? And that shows them, you know, that example that it happens to all of us, and that you're not alone, and that you have to kind of reassess and figure out where you're going to go next.
We also acknowledge that the relationship between a teenager and a young adult and their parent may not be in a place where this would be a comfortable conversation between, you know, the two of them. if you feel like your teenager or young adult is going to get angry with you, is going to roll their eyes at you, you know, et cetera, when you bring this up, then that's when we suggest having somebody else that teen or young adult respects and knows, maybe have this conversation with them. So an aunt, a family friend, an older sister, you know, somebody who is not mom or dad, but is kind of saying the same thing that mom or dad would. But we all know, you know, everybody here knows that it sounds very different and it is not perceived as nagging when it comes from somebody else other than mom or dad.
And when you're saying have the conversation, can you give me some specifics of what conversation I'm having?
Yeah. So what I'm thinking of is any specific time that your teenager or young adult comes to you and says, I am stuck, or you notice that they're stuck with something, that's where you should have the conversation about, okay, where can we get some help with this? What resources are out there? You know, who can you talk to? A resource could be a place that you go, but it also could be a specific person. I'll give another example. One of the students that Allison is working with wants to be an actuary. I had to Google that, by the way. I didn't know what that was.
Okay. Confession, Judy and I are math geeks. We've actually taken some of the actuary exams.
That's so funny.
In college.
So. In a previous life, that was what I wanted to be.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Okay, so you know what it is.
I will be talking to you after the show.
And he had brought up to Allison that that was something that he wanted to do, but we didn't know anybody who actually, you know, worked in that field to set him up with, to be able to talk to. And so that conversation between Allison and her student was all about, okay, who do you know in your family that maybe is not an actuary, but works in that field and may know somebody else? So it's, you know, there's not a specific conversation where I'm saying this is question one, this is question two, but it's just an open dialogue of who or what are the resources out there that we could try to find to help us with whatever situation you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that sometimes we'll do is, like, I think that a lot of times it can be really overwhelming to say, okay, so let's make a list. And I'm like, a list of what? So instead I say, well, what's something you want to work on? Like, is it that you want, you know, what part of your life do you want to work on? Do you want to get better at your grades? Do you want to improve your wellness? Do you want to start yoga? Like, what is that area of your life that you want to improve upon? And then from there, because it's something that is an invested interest, then we can build a list off of that. I always say, like, your aunt, you know, Aunt Jane is a multifaceted person, and she isn't just your aunt. Like, she went to possibly college. She might, you know, be a baker. She has friends. So she may be able to offer something that you don't realize because you just know her as Aunt Jane. And she's got all these dimensions and qualities that she can help you and support you.
I like that you talk to kids about resources being things and information, whether it's electronic searches or pamphlets or, you know, going and walking an area and seeing what's there, whatever that is, but to also bring that around to people and looking at the people in your life as resources. And you're right. I mean, I love that. Oh, she's just my Aunt Jane. No, she has all these other aspects to her. And so that might be someone, you know, that they might be comfortable talking to or asking other people in the family about that person first. But what about I don't want to say strangers because it's not strangers, but what about the other adults in our kids' lives? And it could be a teacher or a counselor at school, or it could be a professional that we know that, you know, is a good person for them to talk to. What if they just don't see how they can have that conversation? How do you guide them through even approaching these adults and opening up conversations to ask for information or help or support?
Well, I think it's always important to say thank you before you say please. Even if it's a guidance counselor or a teacher, developing that relationship and showing appreciation, when you go for a favor, it's going to be, you know, taken a lot better And so we talk a lot with our students about building relationships. It's probably one of our key components to coaching kids is saying, okay, so how are you contributing or what are you doing or what is the big picture here? Because we can't just always be takers. We can't always be asking and receiving, but we need to give. And once that relationship is there, then our students are more likely, because of the previous conversations, to be able to be confident to then go have a conversation. And there is a difference between somebody who is, this is part of their job, and having the dialogue and knowing how to prepare and what to say to them, versus somebody who is doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And so I think that that's something that you always want to think about is, you know, just showing that gratitude and respect for them, because they're going to be more likely to help.
I always like the analogy of making sure that you're putting a deposit into someone's bank account, which really just means like smiling at them, you know, having a positive conversation, maybe doing a favor for somebody else. Any way that you can put a positive into that, you know, emotional or social bank account of somebody else, you're building that up so that when you need to make a withdrawal or ask for a favor, it is much better received. I know Allison has told me, because she's a teacher also, nothing drives her more crazy than when a student who has been disrespectful all year long comes to her at the end and says, "What can I do for extra credit?" because they're failing. Well, they haven't shown that they're interested. They haven't shown that they respect her. They haven't, you know, built that relationship up all year. Whereas another student, you know, who has worked hard all year, you know, has had, you know, pleasant conversations with her, et cetera, makes eye contact, tries. And if they're asking for extra credit, it's received much differently. So we talk a lot about making deposits, you know, in somebody's virtual bank account. But then we also have conversations with our teenagers because some of them are very intimidated or anxious about talking to adults. So we have to figure out where they are on that continuum of feeling comfortable talking to an adult. And for some of them, they can barely make eye contact. And for some of them, they're okay with maybe, you know, casual chit chat. But boy, if they have to ask that teacher, you know, why did I get a bad grade on that project? They'd rather like crawl in a hole. It's very intimidating. So we think the first step is to figure out where they are in terms of their comfort level with having a conversation with an adult. And then we take little baby steps to get them to the next level. And that might even look like practicing a conversation before you have it with a teacher. So Allison and I do a lot of role playing with our students where we kind of script out what a teacher might say or what the student could say. We also encourage our students to use email. If right now they're uncomfortable with that face-to-face conversation, we help them script an email and send that to a teacher. You know, of course, a face-to-face communication is ideal, but sometimes it's a huge jump from where that student is right now to having a face-to-face conversation. So we just use a lot of, you know, tools to figure out how we can scaffold them and get them to that next level of eventually having a confident conversation and asking a favor or asking for help from an adult.
Well, as a parent, I mean, one of the things I know that we can do is to not have those conversations for our kids. I mean, we can start when they're young, and if we haven't done it before, start wherever they are now. But when we are out and about together, let them talk to the receptionist at the doctor's office. Let them talk to the dentist or the librarian or the, you know, just as we're out and about going through life, as parents, we have a tendency to step into that first contact kind of a role. Yeah. And I remember back when my oldest daughter was, I don't know, she was probably 4 or 5, and she had an issue with a library book, and I went with her and stood with her, but I didn't talk to the librarian for her. And I just remember that one because it was really hard for her. Mm-hmm. You know, it was extremely hard. And even though I had the foresight to do that at that point, I also know that as time went on, like I said, it's just that day-to-day life, that first contact situation, calling to make a haircut appointment. Mm-hmm. Those little tiny places are those are the little tiny things. Those are places that as parents, we can help our kids build those muscles for communication, especially in a world where so much is electronic. And that's fine, but they do need to be able to have some face-to-face communication skills. And that's a kind of a low risk. You know, I'm thinking about that going, oh my gosh, going and talk to your teacher about, you know, how you made mistakes or got a bad grade or something. That not only do they have to talk to an adult, but the situation can be stressful for them. So I was kind of like, okay, you know, where can we build that? And Judy, I don't know if you had other ideas from that parent angle of how we can support that process.
Well, I was just curious, you know, to back up to respond to Natalie and Allison. When you have encouraged your clients and things like that to reach out and communicate with their teachers at these different levels, how receptive are the teachers or other parents and things if they don't understand that starting point that the student is at?
Well, I'm glad you said that. I think there's a couple different things happen. I mean, some people are just thrilled to see the teenager talking and trying. And then, of course, there's times where they don't get the response that they want. And they're not always going to. And in a lot of ways, I want them to get a positive response. But I think the negative response allows for a lot of work to say, okay, what do we need to do differently? How do we approach this again? Do we let the issue die? And to kind of keep them going, because this is going to happen where they're not going to get what they wanted. They're not going to get the appropriate response, or they're going to feel defeated. And so it allows them to kind of assess and say, okay, I wasn't comfortable how I said this, or I panicked and I didn't say it the way I wanted to. And then we kind of build off of that, you know, and continue going from there.
Well, I know that you guys created a little gift for our listeners, or a resource for our listeners, to help them start those conversations and teach the art of communicating and networking with people beyond parents. Can you share how, you know, what that is and how you hope that parents utilize it?
Absolutely. So the handout is actually a tool that we have used, and I love it because it does a couple of different things. One, we have the part of the handout that allows you to brainstorm and think of all the different people that you might need to talk to in your life, and establish, you know, a relationship and figure out who are they. You know, like I said, who is Aunt Jane and what does she do behind being an aunt? And then the second part to it is it has almost like a parent component where it allows you to kind of reflect and see where is your child at, so you can meet them where they are. And then you're not forcing them to do more than they're comfortable with, but at the same time, you're not treating them perhaps, you know, less maturely than they really are as well. So it gives them a chance to kind of assess where the kid should be. And then the second part is once you've established where they are, you can then figure out, okay, how many times am I going to check in with them? Or do they need me to do a couple examples with them, and where you're going to go from there?
Right. And that second piece is so important. It's like Sandy suggested, it's finding those moments in our kids' lives and in our lives that we can help them step up to the plate in that safe and encouraging environment so that they build that muscle and move forward. And so that starts in that really understanding where our kids are at. I so often see parents step in and you can just see the kid was going to do it themselves, and then the child just shrinks back because someone else can do it better than them, or that's what the belief they're saying. And it creates this limiting thought process of there are things that these people do and I can't do that until I'm older, but then they don't build on those skills. And then when they get older and try it, it doesn't work the same way because they haven't had the ability to practice along the way. So in some ways, everything you're saying today, it goes back to understanding where our kids are at and then moving forward in little ways and encouraging them to try as they build. Is there anything you want to add to that? Am I missing anything?
No, I think that's a really good
explanation.
Sorry. But I wanted to share, I think of a student I have named Logan, and he was really struggling to talk to his mom. And what they did is she was just frustrated that they weren't talking and that he wasn't sharing. And so we started with such a small topic as how was the calves doing? And he was like, I don't know if she's going to want to talk about this. And I was like, well, it's a pretty low risk topic. And so they started there. And then we came back and I said, how did that go? He's like, it went really well. So then the next week I said, well, do you think you could talk about the calves again? And he's like, yeah. So then he talked about the calves again. And then I think the third or fourth week we brought in an element of like his academics, how he was going to approach a test. And I said, well, what do you think she's going to say? And he said, I think that she is going to say, that's not the right way to do it. I said, okay. And what is your response going to be? And he's like, I'm going to say, well, I think I'm going to try this for now. And if it doesn't work, then I will go back. And so he went, he had the conversation, he came back and I said, so how did it go? And he said, she was just excited that I shared. And I thought that was so great. No, it could have went the other way, but the fact that he took that risk and it went really well just showed him that, you know, it's okay to share and it's okay to open up the dialogue, because sometimes they're just afraid to start the dialogue regardless of who it is.
And that's one of the things that I really liked about this tool, I guess, that you guys had created. I appreciate you sending that to us, because I told Judy when I looked at that, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I have one daughter who's taken to networking like a duck to water. And the other one is just, you know, it's an obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And the way that you laid it out makes it, to me, as a parent trying to work with my kid to show them how to find resources, which a lot of resources, and the older they get, the more those resources are people that they need to go to, especially when they start getting into college and they need to get into internships and job hunting and recommendations and all those things, or just, you know, job shadowing to go, what do I want to do? The way you guys laid that out, I really felt like it was something I could sit down with my daughter and kind of go through it step by step, not big, huge, intimidating things. And the fact that you start with, you know, people you already know well, you know, Aunt Jane or Uncle Ed or whoever, but pointing out that they have these multifaceted things, and to be able to take those low risk conversations like you were talking about here. And for me, it really helped, even just for me, literally, not even in terms of my kids, it helped me shift my thinking, or maybe it's wrap my mind around networking a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So I think that word networking itself can be a really intimidating tool. But you guys just kind of walk there and go, who do you know? What do you know about them? Mm-hmm. How might you be able to be of service to them? How might they be able to help you get some more information? I really like the way you structured that.
And it's free to our listeners.
Yeah.
So where can they get it? We're talking about this thing. Where do they get it?
Yeah. If your listeners want to go to www.lifesuccessforteens.com/resources. I know that's a mouthful. So it's lifesuccessforteens.com/resources. They can download it there.
And it'll be, we'll have a link right in our show notes too on the mightyparenting.com site. So if that's too much of a mouthful, they can go where they're used to going and click through from there. But so really, I mean, this whole conversation to me sums up to our kids need to learn how to access resources. They need to learn how to find information, how to find solutions to their problems. And we as parents need to coach them through it or find somebody who can. And that's a thing to remember too, is we may not be the best person to coach them through it. So in which case we can find somebody like you guys, and you know, our listeners are not all in Ohio, so they can't necessarily come directly to you, but you know, find somebody who can help teach your kids those things, or find a course for them, you know, in your local area, skills class or something. But we need to show our kids that we believe they can find answers. So instead of telling them what to do, encourage them to go, okay, you know, where can you find a solution? Where can you get this information? And ask them when you're first starting it, you know, how much they want to do on their own, and just support them as they learn that.
Yes. I'll add to that too, is that your listeners may not know, but so many of these services that you're talking about, you know, other people to talk to your teenagers and young adults, can be found online now. So for example, we meet with students all over the country because we use Zoom. We use an online format to meet with our students. And so even if you can't find something in your local area, I encourage you to search online, because so many of these services now are being provided online for our young people.
Perfect. All right, and so then we said you teach them, when it comes to accessing resources, you want to be prepared before you have problems. So one, make lists of available resources, and two, start building relationships.
Yes.
And in doing that, I like the way you did that. Say thank you before you say please. So first look at how you can participate, from simple things like being a pleasant human being, just smiling and saying hello to people and those types of things, up through actually contributing or doing some small favors for people. And we, again, as parents, got to look at, hey, how comfortable is our kid talking to adults, and help them build those skills. So you guys, you've made this resource. It's at lifesuccessforteens.com resources. Obviously, you then are at lifesuccessforteens.com. So if people just want to find out more about you, they can go there. And I didn't have any other questions right this minute, except Judy, did you have something else? I didn't want to cut you off.
No, I'm good. I'm really excited to know that you guys are available to do stuff online also through Zoom and technology. I think it's fantastic for our listeners who are all over the country. They can access your stuff. Is there anything else, you know, are you guys on social media? Where could they find you?
Yeah. We are on social media. We're on Facebook, you know, under Life Success for Teens, but we actually have a free online community for our parents, and it's called Parents Raising Successful Teens, and it's a great place to go to ask questions for, you know, with other like-minded people or who may be in the same situation as you are. And the community has actually grown. So we have parents in there, but now we actually have, you know, all of our coaches from Life Success for Teens are on there, but also a lot of community members are joining. So guidance counselors, college consultants, there's a pediatrician in there now. So a lot of people have been asking questions, and it's been wonderful because all these community resources are in there answering questions. And we're hosting monthly interviews with different professionals in different fields. We just had somebody come on to talk about budgeting with your teenager. And then next month we have somebody talking about how to encourage clean eating in your household when all your teenager wants is junk food and drive-through. So that's a great free resource for parents too. So I encourage them to check out Parents Raising Successful Teens on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. I know this time of year is a little bit hectic. We're smack dab in the middle of holiday season. And I just want to thank you all. Resources are something that can help improve our life. In today's show, we have, you know, kind of gotten you a whole bunch that you can use in your family and with your teen. And I'm really excited for every one of our listeners to put it into play. If it's your first time listening, welcome. And be sure to go check out mightyparenting.com to see all that we have to support you. And longtime listeners, remember, you are a mighty parent. And Sandy and I will see you next week.